And welcome back to After Hours, 8 o'clock hour. Jay Binkley, Nathan Williams producing the operation. I'll be on with Fesco and Dusty. It's our football segment, 6:45 a.m., baby. We don't play around, man. We get up early. I don't know what time you get up, my friend, but I get up early.
Hey, the alarm goes off early when you're doing Fesco and Dusty, man. It does.
You know full well on that. It goes super early. How did you get going when you were doing that? Coffee, energy drinks, what do you use?
Oh, a lot of coffee all morning, and usually a nap, hour or two around the lunch hour when you get home. Yeah,
I have trouble napping. It's really weird.
Like, I would say I did as well.
I've always had that since I was a kid. Like, I hated naps.
Till that alarm started going off at 4:30 in the morning there for a couple of months. Yeah, then I could nap all of a sudden.
I remember I'd do Chiefs post-game. All these primetime games they have, right? I'd go sometimes to like 2 or 3 in the morning. And I remember doing Fesco that next day. And there was one day I just stayed here. I think I went to Quick Trip or something at like 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And it's like I'll be damned if I'm going to get like an hour worth of sleep. Because once I like go to sleep, just keep on going, man.
I think the craziest.
Like, I couldn't hear the alarm clock, man. It'd be like Christmas vacation. Couldn't hear a dump truck running through a nitroglycerin plant, right? I wouldn't wake up.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think the craziest one for me was the night of the stadium vote was on the air producing Vern. And, you know, he went all night because the vote results came in during the post-game show. And then the next morning on Fesco and Dusty, yeah, that alarm came early. It's always crazy, you know, when I get a text from one of the guys at 9, 10 o'clock at night, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I don't know how you're still up. And Dusty especially, he'll be...
Oh, Dusty rocks.
Running around Kauffman, getting audio late at night at a Rose game. And I'm like, dude, you got to be
Dusty's
up
Dusty's young buck,
five
man.
Hours,
remember
man.
He went to St. Louis for Jack's debut.
Yeah, no, he's a monster. And I just sometimes I'm like, oh, my gosh, I don't know how he does that.
He'll get old. He will. He's in his 30s, man. You can do that crap. Well, you know what I'm saying? You just do. And then you get Bob's age, and you're like, eh. I just texted Bob a minute ago. He said he's still awake at this point.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. No, yeah, they're – sun's still out. They're still kicking.
Yeah, so, you know, Bob might be hitting bed.
I think Dusty's a nap guy as well after the show. I think that's how
he
does it.
I think Dusty's a go and play golf guy. he leaves and goes and gets 18 in and then maybe naps or whatever at this point. But I keep seeing this stuff, and I'll give it to the SEC. Like, the Big 12's already had their media days, right, football? The SEC does it smart because they do it during the All-Star break, right? And it captivates the news, right? They know what they're doing. Like, this is marketing 101. So Arch Manning, have you seen all that buzz with Arch Manning, right? You an Arch Manning guy, you thinking, all right, this guy is easily, the quarterbacks are going to be a lot better this year. The quarterback class is good when you got, you know, Cade Klubnik and Garrett Nussmeier and Arch Manning and Lenore Sellers. It's going to be, the quarterback's going to be good this year, I think. But I'd like to put Arch Manning as the top. Arch Manning gets that run to be that dude. But then you think about it, man. Like, when we did our character concerns at NFL Draft Podcast, remember when the Chiefs took Worthy? Like, we liked Worthy. We actually mocked Worthy back in, like, September of the year, last year at Texas. But in all the video you would watch was Quinn Ewers, like, barely getting it to him. Like, Xavier waiting on the ball to hit him. Quinn Ewers was going to be the truth. Quinn Ewers skipped his senior year in high school, right, to go to Ohio State. Then he transfers to Texas, where he's from, right, state of Texas. He gets drafted in the 7th round, pick 231 by the Dolphins. And Arch Manning couldn't beat him out in his second year. Like, what's that tell you, though? Seriously, that I know they made the playoffs, but he couldn't beat out Quinn Ewers to be quarterback. And he had his chances. They put him in there. And he showed his legs that other Mannings don't have. Yeah, I'm expecting big things from Arch, but I also know about the guy that couldn't beat out Quinn Ewers. So I just look at it like that. I know he met the... Oh, by the way, when Sarkisian came out and did his walkout to his press conference, they played Texas A&M's fight music for a Texas coach. Yeah, that just shows you the respect they're getting. But anyway, back to J.J. Piccolo. He did join Cody and Gold today and probably join him one more time before the trade deadline. That last meeting with J.J. will be epic, I think. I was on with J.J. a couple weeks ago. I was talking, you know, about the stupidity of the third wild card. And how everybody, it's hard to find trade partners because they all think they're in it, right? you don't want your fan base to think you're throwing in the white towel. So anyway, JJ was asked about trading, about the trade deadline. Would they consider trading for an MLB player or an MLB ready player? What type of player would they trade for? Because you know those calls are starting to heat up at this point as all teams are looking to make that run. And I think position themselves. There's so many teams jumped up, bundled up, Nathan, that whoever makes all these moves is going to separate themselves because they're all just right there lumped together.
I think the best way to answer that is we're going to try to improve our team any way we can. And we have to be, I think, open to different concepts. And if that includes something that maybe is a piece off of our major league team to get something back for our major league team, then yeah, we got to think about that. You know, you could probably define seller in a lot of different ways. But when you're sellers, you're trading major league pieces for prospects for the most part. I mean, that you're trying to rebuild. That's not the case for us. We're trying to make our major league team better, ideally in 25, but certainly in 26, 27, 28. Any way we can make our team better, and it may be a tough move. You know, that a lot of times, though, when you have a partner like that, they may be shopping the same thing you're shopping, and it just may not line up. But until you have those conversations, you don't know where the teams are. And, you know, now that the draft's over, I would expect that, you know, today is a day that we'll get very busy with teams checking in with each other and a little bit more clarity on who's going to be thinking, you know, the way you just posed that question, thinking now that they are sellers or thinking, you know, we're definite buyers. We got to make those calls and figure it out. But this is about the time it'll start shaping up, especially with all the teams that are still in the race.
I always go back to kind of what my uncle said, you know, everything he had was always for sale, man. Everything's for sale for a price. I mean, obviously you're not trading Bobby Witt Jr. That's one thing you're not doing, but other things you have to look at. But I'm kind of to the point where I understand Lugo, like, give you, but what are you really getting back for rental? I mean, that's the one thing we have to ask, because so many trades are done in baseball. Like Taylor Clark, right, was traded last year for the Royals. He's back with them now, you know, and he's been terrible. So what are you getting? What are you getting in return? Is it better to trade him for nothing, somebody that's going to be middling around in your AAA or AA? Or is it better to have a guy to help you push past, because everybody's kind of jumbled up there, push past the season? Or would you view, because I know it's about 50-50, like trading Lugo to get something, but you got to get something good, right? Like I look at Detroit last year, a team that made the postseason. They didn't do a lot of moves, right? Because they positioned themselves to be where they're at now. And they didn't blink. And look at them. Look at them, what they're doing. Do you view a Seth Lugo move? Because that's the obvious one the Royals could move. I view it as when you do that, you wave the white flag. And I understand like Kyle Wright and Dallas Keuchel and Rich Hill could be those other guys in rotation. I'm sorry, but that's not Seth Lugo.
A few weeks ago, I would have said no. But now I believe that that signals the white flag. And I think you hinted there at the reason. The reason is, I think Royals fans are going to be shocked if they do move Seth Lugo at how light the return is.
It's going to be light. Seth Lugo, it's a rental player for 2 months.
Exactly. They look at him and they think, oh, he was second in the Cy Young voting last year, but it's only for a couple of months. And I think fans...
Or was Reagan second and he was fourth?
No, Reagan's was fourth.
Seth Lugo was second. Yeah, Lugo was second.
And I think fans take an extreme look at the trade deadline, and they think if you're buying, you are what the Royals in 2015 are. They are, we're selling off any prospects to go get Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist and win the Worlds. We are shoving all of our chips in the middle. Or they're thinking it's a complete teardown, and you're doing the opposite, and you're selling off, you know, Vinny and Mikel and Bubic and all these guys. The trade deadline doesn't have to be that. I think teams nowadays view it as an opportunity to make themselves better. And I know that sounds cliche, but the Royals went out and acquired a Cole Reagans in a lost season. They can go out and trade a Seth Lugo in a season that is still, I mean, look at what the Tigers did last year with Flaherty. That being said, though, this pitching staff has taken on too much water, in my opinion, to still be great without Seth Lugo.
No, I'm with you, because it's elite. Like in the NFL, you want that elite quarterback, right? We just did a quarterback, right? You need that elite quarterback to do something. I'm looking at the Royals pitching staff being second in baseball and ERA, and you're saying, would still complete this puzzle? You have a unit that's elite. We might not see second in ERA for 20 more years, Nathan. We might not see it for 20 more years.
And this team is not a team that's catching the Tigers. They're not a team that's going to get a bye into the ALDS. This is a team that in the best case scenario, hovers around 500 for a few weeks. They go and get a couple of bats at the deadline. The pitching remains dominant, and adding those couple of bats turns the offense on. They rattle off 7 out of 8 in the middle of August, and all of a sudden they're an 84-87 win team at the end of the season. That's the best case scenario for this team right now. And so I think that includes Lugo, Bubich, Cameron, and Waka being themselves down the stretch. And so I think you also don't have to go out and make a groundbreaking trade for a bat in order to get there. I think you go get another rental that could be had for cheap.
Suarez to me would be a rental cheap.
Ramon Laureano from Baltimore. He's on a $4 million 1-year contract with an 820 OPS. He plays left field. Go get a guy like that.
But Baltimore's playing better now. I know they're still 7.5 back, but in their mind,
someone of that ilk.
Yeah,
it's who I'm looking at. You don't need to go get your Kyle Tuckers and even your Eugenio Suarez's. It would be nice, but he's gonna get bit up, and he'll end up in the Bronx, in my opinion.
He'll get up. His average is not there, but he's clutch though. What, 3 grand slams this year?
You're
just clutch.
But I think achieving the best case scenario includes the rotation remaining what it's been, and adding one or two more professional hitters to the back end of that lineup.
Here's one more thing that JJ said before we get into kind of his view on the season so far, which we'll do after the break. But just a view on the All-Stars they have this year and what he thinks of the 4 All-Stars the Royals have, which, by the way, I don't think any of them's played at this point, have they? In the third, I don't think anyone's yet. Here's his thoughts on the All-Stars.
Happy for all of those guys. I mean, it's 2 of them. It's their first go around in the All-Star game. So that, I mean, what's more special than that? When you're a little kid, you're watching the lineups, and to think of a moment where you would be on that line, alongside of all the All-Stars, the great players in the game, it's really special. And I told Chris and Michael, just take in every moment, enjoy it. You really deserve it. Yeah, that's why you're there. Carlos's been there before. Bobby's been there before, but it's just a really good thing for the organization. And we felt the same way. We were very upset that both Carlos and Michael were left out. And quite honestly, we feel like Lugo should have been an All-Star as well. But things worked out. And, the 2 of those that were left off initially were named to the All-Star team and couldn't be more proud. And, with Michael, just thinking back to when he was 16 years old at our academy and probably 135 pounds, to now see him 6-7 years later playing in an All-Star game is pretty special. And everybody in our organization is really proud of Michael, and our coaches and scouts should be proud of themselves for identifying somebody at a really young age that's an All-Star. So it's a great accomplishment, for every facet of our organization.
That's great, but there's one thing you got to do, and you got to win. I'm so glad the Royals have pitchers in the All-Star game, because if they didn't, that was a travesty, because this is why they're good. It's like when they had their players-only meeting when they played the A's back here, right? And supposedly it's the hitters and stuff that talked. I'm like, why isn't the best of the best of this? Why this group is good talking? Well, I want to hear from Waka. A guy that's put 13 years in. I want to hear from Lugo. Hopefully they spoke, right? Hopefully the pitchers got the talk, because that's what's carrying the weight.
It's the currency of baseball, and you can see a great rotation carrying the worst offense in baseball to a 500 record.
100%.
Flip those 2, and it would not be the same. If you had the best lineup and the worst rotation,
we've seen that before. We've seen that with like Beltran and Dye and all that, and Sweeney. We saw great hitting and crappy pitching.
So this is as frustrating as this year has been, and I think it's gone towards one of the worst outcomes of this season that it could have been at the start of the season, assuming everyone was healthy and things like that. This is how you have to compete as a small market that doesn't have the pocketbooks of a New York or an LA, is develop starting pitching, which they've done, and then make shrewd moves at the deadline.
That's the best thing about Bubich being homegrown.
Him and Cameron, they turned Reagans around. And I understand that Seth Lugo and Michael Waka had success, but Lugo was new to being a starting pitcher, and Waka had a few really bad years. Most of the things that they have touched at a major league pitching level has turned to gold in the last 2 or 3 seasons. And they must continue to do that and somehow figure out how to not have the worst offense in baseball.
But you gotta do that and be good, because even like I look at the Chiefs and Brett Veach and salary cap, and everybody's got the same amount of money to spend and the same 256 picks or so in the draft with the talent. So he's got to be better than everybody else. And then you have to, you know, flip a Parker Anger, you know, for Dallas to get a cornerback. You have to go out and get a Harrison Butker, his first big move when he grabbed Harrison Butker off the Panthers, you know, practice squad to be a guy that's won three rings for this team and one of the best kickers in NFL history.
Yeah. Like that was a feats move.
You just have to do stuff like that. And that's what we're starting to see. More on J.J. Piccolo and how he views his season so far. And maybe talk about Q a little bit, defending his players. He did talk about that as well. We'll do that next. Welcome back. Jay Binkley, Nathan Williams producing the operation. What? American League had a guy in first and third, two outs. Couldn't capitalize.
And it wasn't a Royals hitter's fault.
Not a Royals hitter's fault.
Sounds like the Royals, though. I told you we got a break from the offense, and I guess I was wrong because runners in scoring position, nobody out, and the team that I'm rooting for still is not succeeding.
So we're getting almost to put the subs in time. About the fifth inning.
They've cycled through a few. They took Freddie out on defense in the last inning to give him the ovation.
They
so
put Pillow Bear, Pete Alonso, right?
Yeah. So they're getting there.
Did you see Pete Alonso crack that bat over his knee a la Bo Jackson?
Oh, yeah.
And at least it broke. I think probably it had a crack in it, though. When you think it had a crack in it before you take that shot of trying to break that bat over your knee? Because it'd be incredibly embarrassing if it doesn't break.
It's a risky move, isn't it?
If there's a crack in it, I get it because you can't see it. But yeah, if Alonso didn't crack that bat that he did at the K, yeah, Jax's guy, right? He's probably, it's Pete doing that. Like, yeah.
It's a meme forever.
But Bo did it. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it had no cracks when Bo did it.
Yeah.
Because Bo was just strong, man. Willie Wilson once told me a story when we had him in that when Bo got here, because they mess with Bo a lot, he said, I'll race you from white line to white line for $100. And Bo just takes off, man. Willie doesn't move. And Bo's like, Bo wins, of course. He turns, what are you doing, Matt Willie? I was gonna race you for $100. And he goes, Bo, you owe me $100. I said I'd race you. I didn't say I'd beat you. So I think Bo, that's just things they did to Bo. You know, the stories of Brett and stuff on the plane, all that, just good stuff from there. But JJ also talked about where he sees this season as far as just how he's viewed the season so far, the frustrations. We'll see if he says he's frustrated with the hitting or not. We'll see what he says. Because I tell you, you look at this team on paper coming to the season, you're like, they should be better than what they're at. Because you see them, they're just not quite there with the best of the best. They should have won two or three for the Mets. Very easily could have won two or three. They're actually in all those games as well at some point. But they should have beat them two or three. But you see they're just better than the Pirates when they play the Pirates. And you know, they're just better than the bad teams. But can they beat the good teams? And that's the question going forward for the Royals, who, by the way, have the second easiest schedule in all of baseball, which you can't really put that barometer on teams before the season starts. But when you're in July, mid-July, teams are what they are. So that's one good thing for the Kansas City Royals. I feel this way, Nathan, when you see football and people are going W's and L's. Because 20 of the last 23 years, teams have made the postseason in the NFL that didn't make it the year before. So that says, hey, if you're putting an L or a W by a team just because of what their record was last year, think again because it can be much, much different. But anyway, here's what JJ said about how he's viewed the season.
We haven't played to our capabilities just yet, and we're still in the middle of this thing. So I'm really – I think we all are very happy about that. We if it wasn't for our pitching, who knows where we'd be right now. But our pitching's been outstanding. We've weathered some storms there with the pitching. We haven't had Cole essentially, you know, pretty much the whole year. We haven't had Hunter Harvey the whole year, and we're still competing at a high level on the mound. And that's, you know, that is a building block for us. So that's what has allowed us to be in this position. Just when you look internally, things that we know we can do better, we have done better in the past with the same guys on this team, is capitalize when we have opportunities to score and run the bases better. They're the two areas that we were built on last year. So if our offense was sputtering a little bit, we were still scratching runs across because we did those things. And we have four pillars. It's pitching, defense, situational hitting, and base running. The first two, we're doing pretty well. The last two, we're not. we do that better, we're going to win more games. And then obviously, you know, our offense just as a whole is going to need to step up. You know, we've got to be hit better than we've been hitting overall. We got to get on base at a higher level. But I wouldn't say these things in a venue like this or a platform like this if I didn't feel like we could do it. I know our guys feel like we can do it. And now it's a matter of stop talking about it and go play and win games. And that's what needs to happen.
And again, the second easiest schedule of all teams going forward. Here's that number, by the way, Nathan. Listen to this. In the NFL, at least one team has won its division the season after missing the playoffs entirely in 53 of the 55 seasons since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970. Winning the division the season after finishing last or tied for last in 20 of the last 23 years. It's like the Bengals didn't make the playoffs last year, but you know they're going to make a run and probably make the playoffs this year. Some teams only that's the scary thing about saying, well, it's the easiest schedule, the toughest schedule. You don't know. But baseball right now, you know who's good and who's bad and who's going to be selling off and what AAA pitching you might be facing going forward. But I understand the frustration because I'm with you, man. It's this definition insanity, right? Doing the same thing and expecting different results. I go into every series thinking, all right, when the Royals went down and beat the Rangers like they did, they swept the Rangers, I was like, wow, hey, they're going to take off. And then they go to San Diego and you didn't get the results that you wanted. And then they come back and have that bad homestand. You're like trying to figure out who this team is. You start to get excited that they're going to start putting some wins together and the bats are going to come alive because some of these series they do. And then all of a sudden they go out there and lose 1-0 or they lose 2-1. And they lose these games. You're like, where's the hitting? I mean, sitting out at the K last weekend, you have a runner on second, no outs. And you're like, okay, what's going to happen? But the same thing happens. No runs.
I don't think we're trying to figure out who this team is, though. I think even though there have been a few peaks and many valleys offensively, I think this team is a bad offensive team. They've got more production in the chamber, but they're firing blanks most of the time. Does one or two bats unlock that? Can they hang in there and then eventually start clicking? Maybe. But I think that would be, I mean, what, we're 97, we're two-thirds of the way through this season in terms of games played almost. And so I think if the offense turns it around, we're at the point in the calendar where that's going to be the outlier, unfortunately. So while they have it in there, they have the ability. I don't think there's any question as to who this team is. I think the offense is holding this team back when it comes to situational hitting. And I think I agree with JJ. They can do better. I believe that this team can do better. I don't think it's an island of misfit toys. We just haven't seen it so far. We're 100 games in.
And one guy who really has turned things on, whether you want to believe it or not, now we got a lot of crap for hitting with runners in scoring position and everything else. But Vinny's quietly putting together maybe his best season, which is incredible. Because remember, the Royals were the first team in Major League Baseball to have three guys with 80 ribs last year. The first team in Major League Baseball to have three guys. I think they were first team over 70, three of them. First team over 80. First team over 90. They would have been the first team over 100, but Vinny got hurt
right.
With 97.
Right.
It was incredible what they did. But here's JJ on what Vinny's been able to do.
Yeah, Jake Eisenberg told me the other day that Vinny's got the most hits since May 1 in baseball, and that's Vinny. You know, that's the Vinny we know. And, you know, I don't recall, comparatively speaking, numbers prior to May 1 in 24 and 25, but I know he didn't start off all that well in 24. So it was a little bit of the same, and now Vinny's just found his groove. He's taking better at bats. He's swinging at better pitches. He's laying off the pitches he was swinging at early, and he's been productive. So, you know, I think that we have very good reason to believe Vinny's going to be very consistent and continue hitting the way he has, you know, since May 1. So it's a great sign for us.
And Ned Yost always talked about, you know, give me three guys. Give me three guys that are hot consistently. And then you add the fourth in to the lineup. Well, Sal's been hitting the ball a lot better. His power numbers are up, right? Bobby just coming off a 14-game hitting streak when that ended this past weekend. You get that, plus Vinny. You're like, looking at this team, you're like, okay, yeah, I get it, man. You have the Loftons, which Loftin's been, you know, playing decent as well. But, you know, that and Rave and these guys, the AAA guys that you have in your lineup as well. And then you're getting great production from your nine-hitter in Kyle Isbell. I mean, it's not great, but what you'd want from a ninth-hitter. But they've got to start putting it all together. But that's his thoughts on Vinny. What about Noah Cameron? That's really been one of the bright spots of this team.
Well, I think we didn't have any doubts that he was a starting pitcher and could be in our rotation. I think what he's doing right now is so exceptional. You know, and we don't think in terms of we need this, well, this player is going to go to the major leagues and do X. They need to fill a role. And if you're going to be in the rotation, you may slowly graduate from a 5 to a 4 to a 3 to 2, whatever it may be. But we definitely, I mean, last year, you know, I will say our top evaluators were in Omaha quite a bit in September. And the recommendation coming out of that group was, if we have an injury going into the playoffs, Noah Cameron's the guy. He wasn't on the roster, hadn't made a major league start yet. So when the AAA season ended, we sent a group of guys to Arizona to continue to work out in case we had an injury in the playoffs. And Noah Cameron was one of them. The rest of them were the obvious guys. He was the one that if we had needed a start, Noah Cameron was going to come up last year. And I think I bring that up only because it speaks to the confidence that our top evaluators had in Noah and what he was doing in AAA. So, you know, we're not surprised he's a starting pitcher in the major leagues. Pitching to this level, yeah, we're really, really happy he's doing it because it's so exceptional.
Yeah, he needs to see Omaha no more. I mean, no more for Noah Cameron. But that's great. He was in case of emergency break glass guy for him. They knew what they had. He's been a breath of fresh air. And I'm glad they're starting to let him pitch more and throw more pitches instead of pulling him after, you know, 70 and then 80 pitches, letting him, you know, get into the hundreds that we saw the last time out, which has been, I think, what he was at, 108, 109, something last time he was out. So that was good. One more. We'll do it after the break. His thoughts on Q. I don't know if you agree or disagree with Q not going out there and yelling about Bobby Witt getting thrown off a second. And welcome back. Jay Binkley, Nathan Williams. National League still up 2-0 on the American League. National League's been doing some subbing, man. Waiting for the American League to start putting some of these, put some Royals in, man. Let's put some Royals in, especially the pitchers. Come on. I want to see Bobby Witt Jr. too. 2-0 right now, one out. Here you go, Nathan. Here was the, okay. You saw the play. It's second base, right? What would you have done if you were the manager seeing Bobby? Even though you're going to be tossed, arguing a replayable deal. The umpires, it's gone in New York. It's not them doing it. But still, you got to stand up for your dude, don't you?
Yeah, I'm not usually a guy that's like, Q needs to show more fire. I think it comes down to the players on the field. That is such a bad call that I think you have to get run.
You have to. But you're naturally, you can't argue replays, right?
I understand that. Yeah. I understand. I think it's such a bad call.
But that's fine. You're going to get run. So just get run. I mean, it's bottom line. But here's JJ on all the noise about the disappointment of Q at different times.
To be very candid, I didn't know that there's criticism of Q, but he's a major league manager. They get criticized. That's what it is. I mean, that's when you sign up for that job, you know that that's part of it. But what we, you know, the best way to not get distracted is to not get caught up in it. Don't read it. You know, if you're reading it, then you get caught up in it. You know, our conversations after every game are no different than, you know, when we lose than when we win. What were you thinking here? What were you thinking there? They're productive. You know, they're productive conversations. And they're not with a critical spirit, but, you know, we're a team. We win together, we lose together. You know, we can criticize each other's decisions, but we're in this thing together. And I think overall, I mean, the difference between this year and last year, you know, if we were 3 games under 500 last year at this point, I think our fans, by and large, would be happy because that'd be a great improvement. You know, this year it's a little different because, you know, we won 86 games last year. So I'm glad that our fans have expectations. We invite that. We want that. But it's not going to change, you know, how we operate. You know, we have to do what's best night in, night out. We got to do what's best for our current roster to try to win. And ideally, you know, if we play the last 2 months like we did the first 2 months of last year, pretty good chance we'll be in the playoffs again. But you got to take it one day at a time. You know, you can't, you know, you think about those things, but then you got to bring yourself back into today is the most important day and just start winning some series. You win 2 out of 3, you win 2 out of 3, you win 2 out of 3, you do those types of things. You'll slowly creep back to 5, 6, 7, 10 games over 500. And it looks like this year, that's probably going to be enough to get into playoffs. A lot of games still to be played, but that's how we look at it. You go through these highs and lows, and we just need to start playing better, more consistent baseball to have better conversations, and our fans will be happy and they'll like you.
It's a great response by JJ. I really like the job that JJ's doing. And as far as Q, I mean, there's only certain things a manager can do, to be honest with you. But as far as the team is concerned, you know, they've got to be the guys. It's like what Vern says, you know, don't slide off the bag. Don't do those things. But I would like to see the fire. And, you know, for the most part, when the Royals had runners in scoring position, pitchers just started to throw inside because the Royals weren't going to do anything about it. Like, they weren't going to do anything about it. But I like fire. I like getting thrown out of a game once in a while. I think there's a time and place for it. And I think the Royals have missed opportunities this season to show some fire in different situations. I'm talking about the players and the manager.
I think I would have liked to have seen fire in that moment. And the one that sticks out of me that was similar was last season when the Yankees were in town and the Royals were trying to avoid a sweep.
Yep.
In general, though, I'm just not a guy that's like, I need to see more or less fire out of the manager. I personally am a fan of the job that both Q and JJ have done. On that Bobby Witt call, I do think that even though it would have been an automatic ejection, I think
the level your guys,
of that
man.
Was warranted.
You have to defend your guys. Ned Gost is really good at that. Like, he was old school as can be, but he let the players be themselves. But he always had their back. And I always reference that. I spent a lot of time, you know, at the stadium and stuff. And Ned would sometimes take a while to come into the post game, mm-hmm. right? Because he was in the locker room first. And he gets the tenor of the way things are going, right? If they're going to be asking about why Escobar stole that bag and got picked off, right? He's going to defend it saying, well, that was my decision or whatever. Like, he was always going to take the arrows. Mm-hmm. He was always going to have the backs of his dudes. And you know what? That resonates in the clubhouse.
I mean, Ned Yost wanted...
When he takes the arrows.
Wanted to get into a fist fight there against the White Sox in like 2018 or 2019 when the Royals were
Ned Yost took
him.
A lot of crap where everyone to fire Ned,
yeah.
you know, for doing things, and he wasn't real popular because he was taking a lot of the blame for a lot of things that he didn't need to. But he did it to show and spark some fire in Aiden.
Yeah, but I guess by the same token, though, I think I see a lot of the same in terms of being steady. In terms of not going to change my demeanor based on how today is going, I see that in Cuchero. So I'm not the guy that
100%
walks around
he's
here
an
saying,
analytical guy, and I respect that because he comes from the Rays tree, man. So
100%.
That's what they do.
By the way, we saw another ABS challenge in this last inning, and it was overturned. And it was Jacob Wilson of the A's.
Oh,
who
really? Wilson
for it.
Got it overturned.
And when it was overturned, when they were showing the replay on the scoreboard, all of the players in that dugout were laughing and joking. These guys love this thing. This thing's going to be in baseball next season.
Oh, it will be 100%. And the umpires hate it. Coming up next, though, Trey Smith. The Chiefs got a long-term deal with Trey. Nate Taylor, now of ESPN instead of The Athletic, joins Carrington Harrison each and every week. He's one of our Chiefs insiders. He had some really interesting things to say. He's in Bristol. They had the writers there in Bristol, Connecticut, at ESPN headquarters. He joined to talk Chiefs next. Still 2-0 National League, top of the six. Bobby Witt Jr. is now in the game, by the way. He'll be hitting ninth. Imagine Bobby Witt Jr. being a ninth hitter. Yeah, but it's the All-Star game, right? Jazz Chisholm would be at the plate. Good old Jazz. Boo. Anyway, Trey Smith, of course, signs with the Kansas City Chiefs. Brand new deal. Here was Ian Rappaport.
Trey Smith, a huge deal for him. Was set to play more than $23 million in the franchise tag. Instead, he gets a deal, 4 years, $94 million. That is $23.5 million per year, the highest paid guard in the NFL in this deal done by Torrey Dandy and Jimmy Sexton of CAA. He gets $70 million in guaranteed. $70 million, which, if you're wondering why Patrick Mahomes was tweeting a smiley face emoji, this is why. Trey Smith is one of the best guards in the NFL. Now they have locked up some huge, huge parts of the team. Creed Humphrey, highest paid center. Trey Smith, highest paid guard. A big, big day for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, that's great. But it comes down to Jalen Moore, Josh Simmons, the left tackle. That's the difference. Chiefs have been solid, great, elite between the guards and the guards in the center. They have been. We'll see what the left tackle situation can be. Oh, that's great. Again, you have a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes one time in the history of this organization. That's just the way it goes. New England will never have another Tom Brady. It's never going to happen. I doubt the Chiefs ever have another Patrick Mahomes. Give him the weapons, man. build up the line, give them the weapons they need to succeed. Take advantage and build up. Again, take advantage of your window of opportunity here for the next decade with Patrick Mahomes. Nate Taylor of ESPN now joined Carrington Harrison from Bristol, Connecticut, the headquarters of ESPN. And he talked about how Trey Smith now must become Joe Tooney type elite.
Trey Smith's got to become Joe Tooney. That's exactly what he has to become to make this deal be an absolute home run for the Kansas City Chiefs. It's a better player-friendly deal than it is a team-friendly deal. And so I know when you have this dynastic run, a lot of times you need guys to take team-friendly deals. Well, I'll tell you this right now. Chris Jones is not on a team-friendly deal, and neither is Trey Smith, and they are two of the highest-paid players on the team alongside Patrick Mahomes, who was severely underpaid based on his value and his production. But this is the risk-reward that you play, and because you traded away Joe Tooney, you think Trey Smith in years 26, 27, 28, and maybe even 29, if he even gets to the fourth year of the deal, can be an all-pro player, can be someone that one day will potentially be in Canton, Ohio. I know that's going to happen for Joe Tooney already. That'll be the question for Trey Smith, because it's great to be a Pro Bowl right guard. But now can you go to the elite, to the elitist? Can you get to a first-team all-pro? Can you be a second-team all-pro? Can you be as consistent and as technically sound, especially in pass protection, as Joe Tooney? Well, that's asking a lot, but that's what the contract demands from this day forward.
Again, the salary cap should be around $279.2 million this year. Chiefs are expecting it to be $270 million. So it's about $9 million more than what they thought. The stuff's good. Again, if you take 22 starters, offense and defense in the NFL, plus the kicker and the punter, you have 24. The Chiefs have four of the highest paid players at their particular position in the NFL. Creed Humphrey, number one. Trey Smith now, number one guard. Chris Jones, number one defensive lineman. That's three. Harrison Butker is your fourth, because so the Chiefs had four players now, the highest paid at the particular position in the NFL. Nate, what's that?
Well, I was just saying the quarterback, tight end, right tackle, and middle linebacker aren't far behind.
No, they're not, and that's a team-friendly deal. Obviously, Mahomes can be massaged. He's going to get his half billion, but it's just as far as this year, going forward to this year. So we know that. And Nate Taylor also talks about the Chiefs. Keep in mind, they've been 15th in points scored per season for the last two. And then they were one, they were four the year before that. But they scored points. But back-to-back years, right in the middle of the pack. What do they need to be this year?
It can no longer be a top 12 offense. Hell, it can't even be a top 8 anymore. If Patrick Mahomes is protected, if Creed Humphrey plays to expectation, if Trey Smith plays to expectation, if you have a better solution to the left tackle position while also giving up some of your strength at left guard, well, that's a fair trade in a lot of senses, and a lot of teams will make because of the positional value and essentially what we saw last year from what Patrick had to go through, the amount of hits he took, the most hits he's ever taken in his career because of the instability at left tackle. So, hey, you have Jawan Taylor for another year at right tackle, and you got three receivers that, if they stay healthy, have never played a snap together with a Hall of Fame tight end and a coach and an offensive coordinator that have known each other for decades. So it's got to be top five. Everyone obviously needs to stay healthy, but it's time for the offense to give back to the defense. And we don't say that often in Kansas City, but these are why you made these moves, because the defense has really carried much of the offense to where you could give Mahomes a chance to win you the game in the fourth quarter. And most of the time, that's going to happen. Well, the offense could not give the defense a chance in the Super Bowl. That has to change this upcoming season, because that's the greatest way this team can improve from last year to this year.
So, yeah, the offense, and think about this too. Like, Andy Reid made these comments, Mahomes did at minicamp. It's going to be different. The difference is the receivers know what they're doing now too. It's part of that offense. Hollywood Brown's been around here for a year. He understands the formations, the snap counts, everything else. Rashee Rice, of course, knows what he's doing. And now Xavier Worthy's got that year under his belt. And they haven't had that before. Andrew even said that, you know, different formations, he didn't start sprinkling in until midseason last year because the players weren't acclimated to him. Well, now they are. Now they're all coming back. And again, it's about health. Because going in, all right, looked like you had Hollywood Brown, Rashee Rice the whole year. Week four happens, you don't have either. I mean, that stuff happens. But that is a key asset of what the Chiefs have going forward as far as that. So I'm looking for this offense to do many, many good things next year. And last but not least, what does this mean for the Trent McDuffie deal with him on the clock now for the Chiefs? He's still under contract, but we'll see what happens, what they do.
Now, after you pop some champagne, you do a round of applause, you take a deep breath. Ooh, buddy, you got to go through this again because when the Chiefs travel to Sao Paulo, Brazil, a couple days before the season opening game that Friday night, you have better had a deal in place using the fifth-year option as a little bit of an extender because you already enacted that to get a deal done with Trent McDuffie. Because if you don't do it now, that price is only going to go up because, kids, I'm telling you, I have more confidence in Trent McDuffie being an even more excellent player further in his career than I do right now with Trey Smith.
And you know what? It's going up because Sauce Gardner, same draft, $30 million per year. He just got his payment. Nathan, great stuff, man. Enjoyed working with you tonight, my friend.
As always, Bink. Thank you, man.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the All-Star game that you're watching. They'll show it again on MLB Network coming up here, I think, as soon as it's done. But anyway, have a great night, everybody.